This morning I'm going to give a talk about Lin Ji, who's the author of the text that we're looking into for this 3 weeks of our coming and going session. Lin Ji, who is our Dharma ancestor and the founder of the Lin Ji School of Zen, which in Japan became the Rinzai School, one of the three braids that make up our Boundless Way Zen lineage. And in looking into Lin Ji, I have been charmed, I would say, strangely charmed by the stories about him. I love stories, and stories are a way for me to come into some kind of understanding of these ancient characters, these people who lived over 1,000 years ago, who set Zen in a certain direction, and that trail is one we're all following now in our own 21st century American way. So when I read these stories, I put myself into the characters just like I might when I wake up from a dream in the morning. All of the people who appeared in the dream are in some sense me. And these stories are dreamlike, and all of the characters are like me in some way. Sometimes they seem far away from me. Sometimes they seem very close to my heart. So I'm going to read you a version of Lin Ji's awakening story. Many Zen masters have these awakening stories. Sometimes they're apocryphal. It's hard to believe they actually happened this way. But there are enough details in this that make me think some of these things probably happened. So here's the story, and then I'll do a little commenting on just one section of the whole story. So Lin Ji was a disciple of Wang Bo, and he lived in the 9th century. And it's said that from the time he started with Wang Bo, he was very good at doing his duty. He was called exemplary in his duties. And already you can see the dreamlike quality of this story. If you think about your own duties here at the temple, might you be called exemplary? Maybe the judge arises and says, "No way." And suddenly we find ourselves far away from Lin Ji already. He's the perfect student. He's doing everything right. And at this time, the head monk was named Mu Zhou, who also became a great teacher later. Mu Zhou asked Lin Ji one day, "How long have you been practicing here?" And Lin Ji said, "For 3 years." And Mu Zhou said, "I've noticed that you've never gone to Doksan with the master once. Why is that?" And Lin Ji said, "I don't know what to ask him." So here's this exemplary student, this wonderful student, but he's never gone to Doksan. We highly value Doksan in Boundless Way Zen, and we encourage people to come as often as it's offered, although we also say that it's optional. So clearly in Wang Bo's monastery, it was also optional. And Lin Ji had not ever taken the option in 3 years. So Mu Zhou, being the person that he is, and you can get some of his flavor, he says, "I have an idea. Why don't you ask him this question?" You can already feel the trickiness of Mu Zhou prodding this exemplary, perfect student. You know, when we're doing things well, sometimes we don't want to go into Doksan because we don't want to be tested by the teacher. We're afraid of the teacher seeing right through us, as if that would be a bad thing. Mu Zhou said, "Why don't you ask him, what's the essential meaning of Buddhism?" So Lin Ji, being the exemplary student that he was, went to see Wang Bo. But before he could finish his question, Wang Bo struck him. Lin Ji went out, and Mu Zhou asked, "What happened?" Lin Ji said, "Well, I tried to talk, but he hit me." Mu Zhou said, Go and ask him again. So Lin Ji asked Wang Bo again, and Wang Bo once again hit him. Lin Ji asked a third time, and once again Wang Bo hit him. So three times, trying to ask this question, trying to do the right thing, getting hit every time. Lin Ji went to Mu Zhou and said, "You urged me to ask about the Dharma, but all I got was a beating. I think, because of who I am, I'm just not able to comprehend the essential mystery. So I'm leaving." So 3 years being the perfect student, three times he goes into the teacher and is hit, and he gives up. Interesting. Maybe we can feel into this a little bit. We want to be good, but the teacher seems to be telling us that we don't get it. And the judge arises once again, and we say, "I'm out of here." Mu Zhou said, "Well, if you're going to leave, you should say goodbye to the master." Again, poking him, prodding him, daring him to show up in a certain way. Mu Zhou went to the teacher, Wang Bo, and he said, "That monk who asked you those questions, he's pretty young, but he's also pretty extraordinary. If he comes to say goodbye to you, please give him some appropriate instruction. Later, he'll become a great tree under which everyone on earth will find refreshing shade." I read this story on Saturday at the retreat at the Greater Boston Zen Center, the commuter sesshin. And when I got to this line, it touched me so much, because Mu Zhou, the Dharma brother of young Lin Ji, saw something that was actually true. Lin Ji really did become a great tree under which all of us are finding refreshing shade. His teachings have resonated through all these centuries. Even though at the time that this was happening, he had no confidence in himself whatsoever, Mu Zhou saw his potential. So the next day, Lin Ji came to say goodbye to his teacher, and his teacher said, "You don't need to go someplace else. Just go over to the next town and practice with Dai Yu. He'll explain it to you." This is so much like what we do in Boundless Way Zen that it's almost amusing to me. We might say, you know, "Well, I can't really help you, but go to see David, go to see Josh, go to see somebody else." And there was this other master, Dai Yu, who lived nearby. So Lin Ji went to Dai Yu, and Dai Yu said, "Where have you come from?" And Lin Ji explained everything and said, "Three times I asked Wang Bo about the essential doctrine and he hit me. I don't know if I made some mistake or not." And Dai Yu said, "Wang Bo is like an old grandmother. He's so kind and affectionate, and he puts up with all of this for your sake. And here you are, asking whether you've made some error." Upon hearing these words, Lin Ji had an awakening. And then Lin Ji said, "Actually, you know what? Wang Bo's dharma's not so great." Dai Yu grabbed him and said, "You little bedwetter. You just came and said you don't understand, but now you say there's not much to Wang Bo's teaching. What do you see? Speak. Speak." And we know that years later, Lin Ji would use this same technique on people. He would grab them and insult them and shake them and say, "Speak. Speak." And Lin Ji hit Dai Yu three times. Dai Yu let go of him and said, "I'm not your teacher. Your teacher is Wang Bo. I have nothing to do with this." So Lin Ji then left Dai Yu and returned to Wang Bo. And Wang Bo saw him and said, "This fellow, coming and going. When will he ever stop?" Lin Ji said, "Only through grandmotherly kindness will I stop." And then he bowed and he stood in front of his teacher. Wang Bo said, "Who has gone and returned?" Linji said, "Yesterday I received the master's compassionate instruction. Today I went and practiced at Dayu's." And Wangbo asked him what happened, and Linji told him. And then Wangbo said, "That old fellow Dayu, he talks too much. Next time I see him, I'm going to give him a painful hit." Linji said, "Why wait until later? Here's a hit right now." And he hit Wangbo. Wangbo yelled, "This crazy fellow has come here and grabbed the tiger's whiskers." Linji shouted. Wangbo then yelled to his attendant, "Take this crazy guy out to the meditation hall." And that's the end of the story for now. So I wanted to talk a little bit about what happened when Linji came back to his teacher. We might say that some of this was set up by all three teachers working in harmony together. The younger monk, Mujo, and Wangbo, the master, and Dayu, the other master, all looking deeply into this person who later became this great tree, and seeing the potential in him. It's kind of touching to know this, because I have to say that as a teacher, it's one of my great joys to meet with someone and see the great potential for awakening, or the great actualization of awakening in everyone that I encounter. And I'm always surprised, not so surprised anymore, but I certainly used to be very surprised that people didn't see this for themselves. And of course, all I had to do was go back in my mind to when I was younger, and I certainly didn't see it for myself. But I was lucky to encounter Dharma teachers who saw my potential and were not directly kind. My first teacher was definitely not a friendly, warm person, although he could be. But sometimes he was very cold. He never hit us because it was, after all, the 20th century in the United States, and hitting wouldn't have been received that well. But there was a certain way that he would encounter all of us, and probably he saw everyone's potential, and he would shake us, not literally, but not accept the parts of our presentations that were not coming from the awakened heart. You know, those parts that come in and make excuses, that say, "Well, I don't know what's going on, I'm just an idiot," or, "I don't know, this is not really for me, Zen. Let me tell you what I don't like about it." Or the parts that come in and say, "Oh man, I had this great experience. Let me tell you all about it." He wouldn't be patient with those kinds of things. And I think I understand now his impatience, and also the impatience, which was really grandmotherly kindness, of Wangbo and Dayu, all in different ways, seeing this great potential and only speaking to the one who was the Buddha, buried beneath all the excuses and the judgments and the negativities. This released Linji to be the person that he could always have been, but hadn't really seen. These wrappings around our true Buddha nature, these excuses and judgments, which of course on one level, in the absolute level, are also the Buddha nature manifesting itself. But we have to see that sometimes when these things arise, we have to, with great kindness towards ourselves, just cut it out. We have to stop being fooled by our own arguments about why we are inadequate. This would be a very powerful thing if we could stop being fooled by these arguments. It would be miraculous, actually, because they seem so convincing. We compare ourselves to other people, and most of us fall short. Some of us have the other habit pattern of the mind of thinking we're better than others. It doesn't matter. It's all judging ourselves, as we like to say, judging our insides by comparing ourselves to other people's outsides. this endless judgment. And Wang Bo cuts through it by just hitting. Just maybe making a shout or saying, "No, moo," as Zhao Zhou famously said to his student, who asked, "Does a dog have the Buddha nature?" No. He wasn't saying, "No, a dog doesn't have the Buddha nature." He wasn't making an argument. He was saying pretty much what Wang Bo said to Linji: cut it out. Stop hurting yourself. What great kindness this is. And when Dayu asked Linji, "What did you understand when you woke up?" he saw the kindness. He saw that he wasn't being told that he was an idiot or a terrible person. He wasn't being struck because he had somehow failed to be exemplary, failed to be the great student. The kindness of that hit, which culturally now in our times would be more like, "No, no, no, don't get lost in your judging mind. Don't do that to yourself." That might be what we might do now instead of hitting or yelling or shouting. But in those days, that was how grandmotherly kindness was demonstrated. Great, deep, deep kindness. The kindness of someone who sees your Buddha nature manifesting, shining, radiating out from the true heart. This is our obligation as we practice together, to do this for ourselves. The teacher just does it as a reminder. But we have to be vigilant. We have to see when we get caught. And we have to see that, yes, in one sense, in the absolute sense, this too is the Buddha nature manifesting itself. But in the relative and absolute coming together, in form and emptiness coming together, we have to see that it's enough already. Cut it out. Just stop. I went through a period, the last few months have been difficult in many ways with people getting sick and people bombing Paris and people doing things and saying things that were quite disturbing to me. And I found myself caught in a kind of spiral of anxiety and depression. And one morning, I woke up just thinking, "Oh shit, another day. What's going to happen now? What more disappointment can I possibly have in myself and others and the world, this violent world? I'm so tired of all this." I suddenly said, "Melissa, cut it out." My feet touched the floor and I laughed. It wasn't that anything had changed. People were still getting sick and doing stupid things, and I was doing stupid things, and I was getting sick, and bombs were going off everywhere in the world. But that wasn't the whole of reality. That wasn't everything. It was like suddenly I got hit with a stick. It was me doing the hitting. It didn't matter where the hit came from. It didn't change anything, but it did widen the space around my contracted heart. I don't know where that voice came from, that voice that said, "Melissa, cut it out." It may have been from years and years and years of these teachings pointing to something much bigger than my small preoccupations. I'm so grateful for this teaching. I'm so grateful for Lin Qi, for Wang Bo, for Mu Zhou, for everyone I've encountered as a teacher, which includes, by the way, everyone in this room. Everyone who, for some reason, has decided to follow the way of Zen. This great path, which is so liberating. And what do we get liberated from? We say we get liberated from our delusions. The delusions are simply the things that steer us away from the true nature of reality, the grandmotherly kindness of the whole universe. In Dogen's writing that we read earlier today, I think it was Dogen, maybe it was somebody else, the whole world is amazing. Everything is a teacher for us. The sunlight coming in through the windows, the snowflakes that are falling, everything, everything without fail is waking us up, widening our view, reminding us how lucky we are to be human beings, even in the face of endless suffering that never, never ends. Zen is not how we escape from suffering. It's how we learn to live a full life engaged with the endless coming and going of suffering. Wang Bo says to Lin Ji, "This fellow who's coming and going, when will it end?" And Lin Ji says, "Only through grandmotherly kindness." "Who has come and gone?" Wang Bo asks. And Lin Ji says, "Yesterday I received your compassionate instruction, and today I went and practiced with Dai Yu. Today I showed up at the temple and sat with the Sangha. Yesterday I watched television and had a beer. Tomorrow I'll go to work." This is the endless unfolding of the coming and going, the endless unfolding of grandmotherly kindness. This is the promise of our way. And then the end. Take this crazy man back to the Zendo. All of us are completely crazy. There's only one place for us, and it's right here. Thank you. So please make yourselves comfortable, and we will have our Dharma dialogue. So you know how to do this. You come forward as, not literally, that won't happen till Shusohosen, but come forward with a question or a comment. It could be about the talk, or it could be about anything that's coming up in your practice.
What a talk! I really felt like it was for me. So it was good to hear that you also read the text on Saturday, so it was for everyone else. I could really relate to many things, but in particular that he hasn't gone to Dokusan for 3 years because he doesn't know what to ask. Because I also often feel when I go to Dokusan that I don't really know what to say, mm-hmm. or that I don't have the right question. So, but I'm still going.
An exemplary student. I think I loved reading that in this story myself because so many people feel this way. And here's somebody from the 9th century, a Chinese man from the 9th century. Like, wow, same thing that we feel. What do I say? How do I show up? What I want to ask, and some people really, you know, there's years and years of people planning the right questions. I love that. You can taste it, right? I'm not going to ask for hands, but I think everybody in this room has done that, including David and me. Just like I gotta really ask the right question. I wanna have a good Dokusan. And those other people, they seem to have long ones, and I hear laughter. I'm gonna try to do it, right? I wanna get that. How could I amuse the teacher? How could I bait the teacher? Yeah, and of course, you know what we really want. Just for you to show up. What a relief that would be. What a relief it is. Joy, really. Jamie, I'm next.
It's a theme from the Linji readings and that I keep hearing in your talk. And, mm-hmm. and this question is the self-confidence, like the you know, there's that call to, like, if you're not working up right now, it's, you just don't have the self-confidence. And that's, so, you know, I just realize all the seeking for external approval, and I just wrestle with that idea of self-confidence, and I guess it's the bigger self, but it's also this self somehow, so I don't know if you could speak even more to that. I get hung up there all the time. I loved your talk. Thank you.
Yeah, it's an interesting thread, and in the reading that we read last night and in that passage, yeah, he says the only thing you're lacking is believing. Like, only thing. and I think all our lives we've been taught not to trust ourselves. You know, and I think in Melissa's talk, there's something about trusting what's appearing in this moment. And how to, well, from Priska's question in the showing up to Doksan, what if it's enough to show up as ourselves? I mean, that seems like the last possibility to me. Like, I'm pretty sure that's not true, but what if it is? And then as we sit in our zazen, this confidence, it's interesting because it's not a bravado, you know, I think you're, but yet it is right here, you know, what if I am enough? And it's such a deeply radical teaching, you know, those neural pathways of I am not enough are so deeply ingrained. But maybe for one breath we can practice. So we don't have to practice in a dramatic way. In fact, this kind of self-confidence might be quite subtle. Although I love that, Melissa, when you talked about the voice of cut it out. Right? You know, at some point, we all have to, you know, take ourselves by the hand and say, you know, David, enough crap. You know, Jamie, you've been here before. And there is a, like, just stop it. Stop hurting yourself. You know, and there is that energy that comes, and who knows where it comes from, or but we can listen to that and trust that in some way. Just show up, right here, this breath. Yeah.
Thank you. I could relate to what Jamie's saying, and also I don't have a question, but oh my gosh, your question has just got to be better than mine, or anything I could come up with. And then taking it from outside in instead of inside out, and then making that better than anything I could be, and then actually going in and feeling like, oh, okay, it's the only way I'm going to come up with a question, it's outside of me, and going in, and not even seeing that I could show up and say, could I just sit in your presence? I don't have a question. Mm-hmm. For some reason, that really touches my heart, because being here has helped me to show up with all the parts that I just thought were unacceptable. And I've laid them before myself and here, and it's been amazing. And working on the koans for me has also been because, well, darn, I can't look outside. And then I get something that just seems freaking impossible that I'll be on for the rest of my life. And it's just that, what was that we read? It's like, I can't do it and no one can do it for me. That ungraspable trace to show up for.
Thank you.
One of the things I was struck by in this, because it's a very long story, is that there's this arc from incredible isolation. I mean, I just have this vision of him sitting there for 3 years, never going anywhere, just sitting there, never talking to the teacher. And at the end, I had this vision of these little boys just whacking on each other, you know, just tussling and wrestling and trying to grapple with each other and the Dharma. And so they went. So it went from isolation to incredible connection. And it was once, basically, he had to cut it out. He had to just stop with the story of, I don't have the right question. And there was nothing left but to just show up and be himself and receive and engage. And it seemed like this really important sort of teaching about how our stories, about our inadequacy, isolate us and keep us from being able to show up for each other.
Wonderful point.
Yeah.
Yeah, and when they get to be little boys playing with each other, you know, that is how it is.
Yeah.
Right? That's why there's so much laughter in the Dokusan room. There can be so much playfulness. Sometimes the laughter is one-sided. but there's this joining together that happens. It's sort of a delightful, like, wow,
yeah.
You. Yeah. You know, that when we dare to let ourselves be that person who shows up. But it's, again, there's something very delicate here, because you could plan to show up as yourself. Do you know what I mean? You could say, all right, I'm going to really show up as myself. I'm going to say, I'm just here as myself, and it's still canned. Like, there's no way out of this. There's no way to make it work, because it's every moment arising. And so, you know, I think there's the Dokusan of sitting in the Zendo, and there's waiting. There's the Dokusan of having the stick passed to you. There's Dokusan of sitting in the chair. There's all these Dokusans. And then finally you get into the room and it's like, oh, this.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, to actually let yourself be surprised and that's really hard to do. It's hard not to plan.
Yeah.
Hard not to strategize. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. One part of it that struck me as well, I think it's related to what Paul was saying myself, that I can relate to is you get kind of stuck in your own way, and then you get afraid, and then I can imagine Lin Chi just not feeling that he had friends, you know, in the Dharma, and it turns out that he did. Yeah, you know, people really care about him and really helped him. And, yeah, it's a nice part of the story.
Yeah.
And that friendship.
Yeah. But, yeah.
You're saying it was interesting last night as we did the opening ceremony and people were talking about what really brings them to practice and the question, what do we really want, you know, as we sit down on the cushion? And quite a number of different people talked about this connection, you know, and of course it's connection to my deep heart. Mm-hmm. And connection to each other and to the clouds in the sky. But this, the delusion of separateness, you know, so painful, again, and feels, from the ordinary mind, it feels so true. Well, there's me and there's the rest of the world. There are two classes of beings, me and everything else. And in this story, to see the breaking through. So I'm not the only one that feels this way, but when we come forward, we see, oh, this is human life, all of us, and that great joy. This very part that we're hiding or that is unacceptable or not confident enough, it is the entry place. It is the very connection. And the point is not to get rid of it or hide it and then I'll be connected, but through exactly what's here. Yeah. Thanks.
You know, as we're talking now, I think, you know, now you can say yourself that, okay, so now I've got it, all I do is I show up as myself. The truth is that that's not going to stick, you know. There is going to be that.
That's right.
But I wanted to, and what I'm saying, like, to honor that part that spent 3 years not knowing what he's doing. Because that's how it is. But that part is necessary in order to get the...
That's right.
To want it enough, or not, you know, maybe want's not the word, but just kind of go through the motions and just be confused most of the time. But know that that's kind of like what it's like.
Yeah,
it's kind of got to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you've got to develop your mind and your spirit a little bit. Just go through that.
Well, and you know, that's part of the Buddhist path, I think, is to that everything that happens contributes to awakening. So, you know, the years of coming in with questions, with brilliant questions, the years of feeling confused, the years of feeling like an idiot are all really important. I think that's such a great thing. And even, you know, the story of the Buddha's enlightenment, he did all this stuff that was kind of off base, and, you know, including starving himself and all these austerities. And, you know, all of it contributed to that moment when he said, essentially, cut it out and sat down. You know, it was like, and you can't be ready for that moment until you're ready for it, you know. So everything is valuable. I really love that you said that. Yeah. So, right, so the point is just keep doing what you're doing until it's that wears away, and then, you know, then do something else.
Yeah. Well, and also all the time we're being ourself.
Yeah, right. We can't help it.
We say, oh, God, I don't know how to be myself. Right? If only I... You know, and the being confused and having to come up with a good question is totally authentic. Mm-hmm. You know, and we think we're quite clever. Oh, I'm really high. No one can see. And of course, it's not really true. There's nothing... There's no escape. And at some point, we can... Or at some moments, we can feel that. Oh, so being myself, if it's a strategy, it's wrong, right? Because if it's a strategy, then it's an idea of myself, and then we're sort of a pale imitation. But even the pale imitation is the full, authentic presentation, right?
Even the one who's strategizing is
exactly.
It.
Yeah.
So there's no escape. It's like a game of, you ever play peekaboo with a baby? You know, they really think that you can't see them. So, thank you all.